Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law. With your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's broadcast, since 1998, the surety industry has protected more than $9 trillion. In 2017, $600 billion alone, according to the Surety and Fidelity Association of America. Suretyship is known as surety bonds. It's an ancient concept that's played a significant role in functioning civilization for hundreds of years. Today, from the law firm of Jonathan P. Cohn, PA, that specializes in surety bond and construction law, is founder Jonathan Cohn. I'd first like to welcome the legal panel host for today, and that would be Gary Singer. Good afternoon.
Hey, Phil. You know, I'm decided I'm going to drop my last name and just go by Gary.
Just Gary?
Just Gary. Just a lawyer formerly known as Gary Singer. Just call me Gary.
You're going to be like the sheer of law?
I am like the sheer of dirt law. Okay. That's true.
I also want to say good afternoon to our listeners on 96.9 FM, 103.9 FM, 740 AM, along with iHeart, TuneIn, and iRadio Now national listeners. I also want to remind our audience they can actually watch the production, How Cool, live Thursdays at 5:30. Just Google Facebook Legal News and Review.
More like 5:45. Well, I'm always late.
That's okay. But just, again, Google Facebook Legal News and Review, and it comes right up. You can actually watch past broadcasts, which is important to some people because they miss some things. You'll see we're recording live at the Kelly Ustaw Building in their mock courtroom. Kelly Ustaw Law Firm is committed to helping you seek justice. Just go to justiceforall.com, and again, that's justiceforall.com. Attorneys all over the country do refer cases to Kelly Ustaw because of their resources, but more importantly, their successes. And that's when your fight becomes their fight. If you've been severely injured because of negligence of someone else, you may be eligible for compensation. Just go to justiceforall.com. Jonathan Cohn, welcome to Legal News and Review.
Phil, great to be here.
Appreciate you. You were on about 2 years ago.
That's right, about 2.5 years ago, the winner of whatever that was.
That was when we were at Alpine Jaguar. But we're now here at the Kelly Ustaw Building. Apparently, you know the people here.
I do. I'm friendly with Bob Kelly, the name on the firm. We were involved in Dive Bar together. That's the organization composed of legal professionals who scuba dive.
How cool.
It is cool. It's nice to be able to talk to lawyers about something other than just law.
Well, first question I have, it has to do about what is suretyship?
Well, suretyship is a pretty broad term because it could span anywhere from your bail bond to the type of work that I do, which are contract bonds. And suretyship, as it applies to what I do in contract bonds, it refers basically to the bonds that you find on a construction project, performance bond, payment bonds, that are there in place to make sure that the project under construction gets finished if something goes wrong with the contractor. And it's also there to ensure that downstream subs and suppliers and laborers and so forth are paid if there's likewise problems with cash flow on the job.
Right. Now, when it comes to these bonds, you know, we always hear horror stories, especially like on smaller projects of contractors skipping town and whatnot. Are these sort of bonds required on all construction projects or just larger ones?
Contractor skipping town.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Where do you live?
South Florida.
Oh, well, okay. Well, it's what was the question again?
Are surety bonds, are they required on all construction jobs or just larger ones? In other words, are they like required by laws or like more of a bank wants it thing?
That's a good question. If it's a public project, it's going to be required by law. Okay. All except for projects under $100,000. With that exception, everything else that's a public project in the state of Florida or a federal project or any other states for that matter, bonds will be required. Private projects Not as much. It's not required by law. Now, if you're a savvy business person, if you're building a $100 million building,
right,
you're going to bond it.
Well, like the courthouse. The courthouse was over $100 million, and the new courthouse that was needed.
Correct.
And I guess they pay a fraction, obviously, to get the bond. Isn't it like 1%?
The surety premiums on average are 1% to 2% of the bond penal sum. Which
so if
is,
it's $100 million, would that be actually 1%?
1% of the $100 million.
Wow.
And then that gets, if it's a $100 million building.
Right.
Now, there are situations where when if a project goes above a certain amount, you might be able to apply for some sort of waiver above a certain dollar amount. So if you have a billion-dollar project,
right,
maybe you'll only require to get bonding up to $500 million. Typically, though, the bond covers the amount of the project. And, yeah, 1% of $100 million is a nice piece of change.
And who's it there to protect? Who's the bonds? Who is the bond protected?
That's a good question.
Thank you. I try.
Well, that's an interesting question too, because it goes against some of the maybe common sense. Because when you hear a contractor say, "Oh, I had to get a bond," you're thinking that contractor's getting it because it's benefiting him or her. Mm-hmm. But that's not necessarily the case. The bond is it's a three-party agreement actually, where you have the party, the contractor who goes to get the bond. We'll call that person the general contractor, also known as the bond principal. He goes to the surety actually issues the bond, and the bond's there to benefit the next level up. So the next level up from a GC would be the owner of the project. So the bond, even though the GC had to, when I say GC, I mean general contractor.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
When that general contractor has to get that bond, it's not for his benefit, his or her benefit, it's for the owner's benefit.
Because
it's telling the owner, if something happens to this GC, goes bankrupt, stops working, walks off the job, whatever, you're a protected owner because this bond is here and the surety will ensure completion.
So it's kind of like an insurance policy.
Oh, that's another door.
Well, I mean, what is the difference
not
between
make it easy?
But what is the difference between a surety bond and insurance?
That's what I just asked.
Yeah. That's a good question.
Thank you.
It's actually that's actually a point that's litigated all the time, and it's a source of confusion among many. And there are a couple key differences. One, which I hit on, was the suretyship is a three-party arrangement, whereas insurance, generically speaking, it's two-party. It's the insured and the insurer. There are obviously some exceptions if the insurance company has to step in and sue a third
right.
party. Another difference is who it protects. As we just discussed, in suretyship, the bond protects the next level up, the owner or the GC if it's a subcontractor bond. Whereas with an insurance policy, the insured is actually protected because the insurance policy is for the insured's benefit. Mm-hmm. So you have a contractor on a construction project, they're required to get like a CGL insurance policy.
Okay, I can see that. Yeah.
That's for their benefit. Something goes wrong, you can file a claim against it. It's for that person's benefit. You got the policy, it can benefit you. You got the bond, it's not necessarily for your benefit.
Well, what is a surety bond indemnity agreement, and why does my spouse have to sign
it? Well, before we get to that, so it basically, you're getting it, it's really a change of who it benefits. So in this case, the contractor is going to buy the bond to benefit the owner versus the contractor buying an insurance policy to protect himself.
Yes, but also the surety bond, you pay a premium for that bond, and that's specifically for that construction project. Whereas with an insurance policy, the insurance company is looking at the overall risk of the situation and adjusting the premium and charging a premium based on the risk. And it's a shared risk amongst all the other contractors they're bonding out there. And so it's like a pool of risk, whereas it's contract construction project specific with a bond.
Okay. So does that mean there's a difference in the financial backing of the issuer? So in other words, you know, an insurance company has to have certain reserves. Assumably, a bondholder doesn't have to have all the money, or do they?
The bondholder, meaning the surety itself?
Yeah, the surety itself.
Well,
do they need the $100 million in the bank, or is it just a portion of it?
They don't. There are no like required reserves like that necessarily in that insurance company perspective. But on any given project where there are losses, obviously they have to meet certain stringent conditions to be qualified through the Department of Insurance.
So I'm not saying there's not financial responsibilities. There's tons of them, and they have their licenses at stake. But on any given
License versus $100 million loss, so it seems almost better sometimes to lose your license now. Well, so in other words, like insurers, because it's a pooled risk, you know, they're allowed to have reserves that, you know, may not even be as much or maybe more than what they're insuring. But a bondholder, you know, there's only so many $100 million you can have sitting in the bank. So how do you know, like, that the bondholder, the surety, if you will, is going to pay out the loss if the courthouse didn't get built or whatever, as we were talking about?
There are financial requirements, okay. And just similar to insurance, a surety does have access to the does have access to the reinsurance market as well.
Gotcha. Sorry.
Sorry, his phone went off. But as I point out, this leads into the next question I asked earlier, is what is a surety bond indemnity agreement, and why does my spouse have to sign it?
Indemnity agreement, well, I'll take that in two parts here. Let's define what indemnity agreement is. Indemnity agreements are found in all walks of life. It's basically an agreement saying that if we got to spend money on your behalf, you're going to pay us back, basically. So where it fits into the bond world is that in most situations where a bond is issued, the surety is not going to simply say, you know, I like you, just sign here, we'll issue a bond. They're going to look into your creditworthiness, which, by the way, is another difference with
business
insurance.
Business and personal, or just business?
Both. They might have, because when they're assessing who they want to guarantee this bond, they're going to look for that business's assets. They're going to look into it. They're going to look into the other indemnitors' financial situation. And why are they doing this? Because the sureties underwrite these bonds on a no-loss basis. They're not expecting to lose money. But if they're going to issue a $1 million bond,
right,
they want collateral security there in at least that much to know that if they had to come out of the their pockets to pay the maximum on the bond, which is known as the penal limit,
right,
they want to know that they have recourse. And they look at the asset situation. They make sure that they have at least the minimum that would cover the penal sum. And then that's...
So how's the penal sum computed? Like on a $100 million project, would it be $100 million?
It's normally the amount of the project.
Okay. So basically, so then let's say you got XYZ Construction Company. If they got $100 million sitting in the bank, why do they need a bond?
A lot of times it's required.
So they can keep working capital going?
Well, if it's a private project, that might be one of the considerations.
Mm-hmm.
But it also might be because it's being required by whoever is bidding out the project. So you may have a flush bank account, but you might be required to have a bond anyway. Public projects, it's not even an option. You're required to have one.
Gotcha, because they don't want to dance in that that dance floor of is this person credit worthy or not. They just get the surety on the hook.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it makes sense. Now, if there's a loss, that means that almost universally, the surety is going to go after their client to get reimbursed.
That's right. The bond principle, or to conclude what Phil was asking about.
Because the bond, let's you know, the surety, if you think about it, say, hey, you know, I'm going to get this gig, I'm going to borrow the money, but hey, if I don't pay it back, my Uncle Jimmy, he says he'll pay it back. So if Uncle Jimmy's got to take the $100 bill out of his pocket, he's going to smack his nephew and say, hey, give me my $100 back. That's who the surety is. It's to make sure the property owner, feels comfortable letting this person do the work, knowing if there's a loss, they can look to Uncle Jimmy, the surety, to pay it off. It's almost like a cosigner, if you will, in a very different way.
Yeah, right. So the surety's Uncle Jimmy and will smack his bond principal nephew if Uncle Jimmy's got to spend $100.
Exactly. But at least the property owner knows that, you know, the startup nephew or whoever, if they don't got it, they can go look at Uncle Jimmy, who does have the money to pay him back.
That's correct. And it's not a blank check. I mean, there's investigations that take place.
Sure. No, of course, it's big business.
Right.
But just to put it in terms our listeners can understand, you know, this is like mom, you know, basically guaranteeing the loan so that way the kids can get their first car or whatever.
Yeah, it's a type of guarantee, you know, on a simplified basis.
Gotcha.
But the building we're sitting in, they probably had a bond.
I
I would assume, or the school that our children go to.
That's
so
correct.
It touches all our lives. So with the new infrastructure investment, you know, on the pipes and roadways, will that also be required as well? Because it's a government project.
The pipes and roadway, yeah, all that stuff.
All that stuff. Wow.
In fact,
there's an exemption for sewage.
Really?
No.
I don't think so. Gary, 100,000 out of work comedians, and I got this attorney next to me. I'm telling you.
He says I'm out of work. I got a job.
No, but go ahead, Gary.
What was it? We're talking about sewage, right?
No, we were talking about how it's touched.
The attorney get involved? You know, like you're obviously an attorney talking about this. So, like, what role does the attorney fill in this process?
It's one of a variety of roles. Mm-hmm. It could be a pre-litigation role where I get a notice that we're having problems with a bond principal. There's a problem on the project. I'd like you to come out along with the claim handler, figure out what's going on. Let's avoid a problem. Also get involved with if there's like a lawsuit or if someone downstream is not getting paid, a subcontractor is not getting paid, and they file a claim on the payment bond, the surety doesn't agree that anything's owed, maybe the sub doesn't have the same opinion. And then we find ourselves in a lawsuit being sued by the sub for payment.
The surety is.
The surety. And the same thing happens on a performance bond. If you know, the GC, something happens, and the owner of the project's got to spend extra money to get that project completed, and they say, okay, surety, I just incurred $500,000 extra dollars. I want you to pay for it. Well, after the investigation, if it turns out we don't think we owe it, you didn't follow the terms of the contract, go pound sand, it might be that we find ourselves in another lawsuit by the owner on the performance bond. Now, that's on the defensive side. We're also a plaintiff, and you've already alluded to before that if we do have to spend that $500,000, then we're going to knock on our bond principal's door and say, hey, Louie, this is Uncle Vinny, we just spent $500,000. I want it back.
Yeah.
And no, you know, Uncle Vinny, and we might find ourselves in a lawsuit but there, as a plaintiff, suing in an indemnity action to get that money back.
Now typically, does that indemnitor have the money to give back, or are they usually busted?
That's
like in real life.
In real life, on day one when the bond's signed, they have all the money that's necessary.
Yeah.
On the day when we go to collect, for some reason, it's all gone. Or at least, you know, 90% of it.
It's a lot of fraudulent transfer stuff after you get your judgment and all that other nonsense.
All nonsense is the key term. Yeah. And it's a whole effort to try to find where it went.
How can I avoid claims on my bond? Do what I say I'm going to do.
Lead a nice, ethical life. And actually, the best way to minimize claims is to be a contractor who sticks to the terms of the contract. And I'll have to tell you, the payment provision of that contract is the most important for everyone looking to you to get paid. And the performance bond of that part of that contract is the most important part that the owners look at. They want to know that you're fulfilling all your obligations. So the best way to minimize claims, just do your job under the contract. That's not always that easy, especially when you're a GC and you're not getting paid on time. Mm-hmm. It makes it difficult to pay your subs on time. There's some ways around that through different types of contractual clauses, but it's not always that easy because no one downstream cares that you're not getting paid on time. They just want to get paid.
Right.
So does it ever become a situation where you're subrogated in for the contractor to go get the money they're owed so you can get repaid?
Yeah. The surety can subrogate into the contractor, step into their shoes to pursue claims against pretty much anyone else. The insurance companies, against, you know, the owner of the project, if they wrongfully withheld money. Mm-hmm. So, yes, subrogation is available.
Yeah, I bet it probably happens a fair amount.
All the time, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting stuff. Is this really only for the big projects, or do you see it in a lot of smaller projects?
You see it in, well, I don't know how you're defining smaller.
Well, what is the definition in that industry of bigger versus smaller? It's a good question.
If we're talking about public projects, anything under 100,000, you don't need a bond.
Mm-hmm.
Between 100 and 200, you can get an exemption for it. So anything over 200 in the public arena, there's going to be a bond. In the private world, you know, it's really at the discretion of whoever's running the project, whether they feel they need it or not. So
I mean, on these mega projects, you know, these huge roadway projects and stuff, are their sureties big enough to handle that themselves, or do they team up and have like a reinsurance type or a co-insurance type situation?
There are but a small handful of sureties out there that can actually handle like a billion-dollar project on their own.
Yeah, that's, I can imagine.
Typically, you find co-sureties, more than one surety on a project, and even those sureties will have reinsurance policies.
Yeah.
And nowadays, reinsurance rates are very low, so the number of sureties who think or who believe they can handle these really mega large projects, billion-dollar projects, has crept up in number. We're not talking by a lot. We're talking from one or two to six or seven.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it just shows the current market.
Are the does the government reinsure?
The government requires bonds.
Like a guarantee? Yeah. It's like, you know, a lot of times they'll have people do loans, even to the government, and then they'll be the one guaranteeing the loan.
I don't think so. I don't know.
Gotcha. And who are the big players out there? Is it like Fidelity and these big financial insurance powerhouses, or are they completely separate companies?
The largest sureties out there are like Liberty Mutual, Travelers, Chubb.
So they're the big insurance companies, yeah. Especially the commercial insurance companies.
Yeah.
So this is another risk line for them, basically.
Yeah. And in fact, it's actually a relatively, I know we were talking numbers at the beginning, right. Sureties are a relatively small risk line for these insurers.
Yeah.
They you know, you talk to one of them and they like fond of saying, "Oh, the surety department's like a pimple on your you know what." They wouldn't know if you blew away in the wind in a hurricane. But you know.
So the premium is their take, you know, that's their VIG, if you will. So they collect that 1 or 2% and they keep that even if everything's performed appropriately.
The surety, yes. They keep the premium, and in fact, you know, on a typical construction project, you'll have change orders. So what might have been a $1 million project to begin with becomes $1.5 million. And if there's an increase in the amount of the contract value, there might be a requirement of an additional premium.
Okay.
Which, again, the surety would keep.
And, you know, you hear about other surety bonds, you know, like, for example, before we came on, we were talking about, like, an appellate bond. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have the kind of bonds where people, you know, don't want to stay in jail waiting, though I guess that doesn't matter in California anymore because there's no more money bonds there, apparently. Believe it, yeah, look it up. It's crazy. So is that the same companies in that game, or is it just a completely different game?
No, there's definitely overlap. So a lot of the sureties, they have their contract surety people and their commercial surety people who handle all these other types of bonds, like the ones you're referencing, and bid bonds and bail bonds and fidelity bonds, wage and benefit bonds, all the variety.
So to bring it down to a smaller level, and you may not know because obviously you're playing in the bigger fields, but if someone's like, let's say, getting their roof redone or their house remodeled, should they ask their contractor for a bond?
There's nothing stopping them from doing it, and mm-hmm. the market right now is very soft, meaning there's a lot of sureties out there. You're able to get, at least right now, favorable terms. If you're in that situation and you want to protect yourself, it's worth looking into. Now, you do have to deal with the reality that maybe this contractor that you want might not be able to qualify for a bond. Maybe he's financially a mess, and no surety would bond him. You also have to deal with the added cost. The contractor might say, okay, I'll get a bond, and you're going to pay the premium.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It could be worth it because if and this never happens in South Florida, so just try to imagine. But if the person you hired to do your roof just disappeared and never came back,
yeah,
it's nice to know that you could go to file a claim and have another contractor come out and finish.
And is that how it works? Is that you actually, the property owner, even on these big projects, files a claim, or do they sue the surety like a guarantor?
It starts off with the filing of a claim.
And that's contractual, though, right? Like you're agreeing when the bond is issued that this is how you're going to start the process? Or is that like statutory?
It depends on what type of bond. Mm-hmm. It is statutory in some respects. In others, it's like it's more regimented, obviously, if it's statutory. But if it's a private bond, you might not have the same rigid claim notice requirements. So you might be able to just, your claim might just simply be suing.
You know, I speak to a lot of attorneys, and you're known as the go-to guy for surety bonds and those issues, but you also are known for construction defect laws. Is that actually the case?
Well, I've done a little bit. I wouldn't say I'm really the construction defect guy, but only insofar as the projects I work on involve some sort of construction defect. But the like the 558 statute in Florida is the construction defect. There are some law firms that's all they do. My bailiwick.
Gotcha. So if our listeners wanted to learn more about this or they have questions, how would they get a hold of you?
Go to my website, jcohenpa.com. Give me a phone call if people use the phone anymore, 954-462-8850. Send me an email, jcohen.
Say that a little slower, your phone number again.
Phone number, 954-462-8850.
Gotcha. Or an email?
Or by email, jcohen@jcohenpa.com. And that's J-C-O-H-E-N and J-C-O-H-E-N-P-A. .com.
It's a good website, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually very interesting stuff. You know, surety, but it's like a whole different world. You know, that's very specific. It's good to learn a little more about it. So thank you, Jay, for Jonathan, for coming out and teaching us all about this. And Phil, always good to see you. And I want to thank most importantly our listeners for listening. Have a great, it's our holiday weekend, but for them it's going to be past that. So have a great weekend. Be safe and
be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448. For legal news and review, remember, be legal.